Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Word association with John MacArthur.
I use the complete idiot's guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior high.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And away we go.
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh, this is Wretched Radio. Congratulations to Grace Community Church. They're going to be receiving a big check from the government to pay for legal fees. Why? Because the government told that church, stop meeting. They said initially, okay. But then they concluded as a local church, Caesar is overreaching and they cannot supersede God's command for us to not forsake the assembling of the saints. So they decided to start worshiping again. Well, let the suing begin. Let the legislators go, because this became a big issue and it was just announced for attempting. This is Mike Riccardi from Grace Community Church. For attempting to exercise unconstitutional public health mandates, the state of California is ordered to pay $400,000 to Grace Church, and LA County is also ordered to pay $400,000. Grace. $800,000 is what they're going to be receiving.
Good job.
Thank you very much. That is really great news for a really great church. Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org. Include your questions, comments, conundrums, or snarks. Please note, I really do try to be persuaded if you think I'm wrong. Do you know why I, and perhaps you, struggle to do that? I think the issue is the P word.
Pride.
Exactly. Because if I have to say, oh, you know what, you persuaded me, that means I have to be like Fonzie and admit I was. Now, let's keep digging. Remember, root and fruit. You got to go down to the root if you want to understand the fruit. So the fruit, in my instance, is I don't want to admit that I'm wrong. Digging down, I discover it's pride. I don't want to have to look like I am less than what I perceive about myself. I'm concerned, aka fear of man. You're not going to think as highly of me as you ought. You're not going to share my opinion of myself. I think that is why I have the fruit. That would be the root, but I have the fruit of it's hard, but I try. I really do. I try. Our flesh can get in the way. So please, if you send something that you think that, Friel, you biffed it, I really will do my best. Can't promise I'll agree or even receive it rightly, but I'm trying. idea@wretched.org.
All right. Rosie wrote in. She didn't indicate which state she was referring to in her email, but she said the churches in her state have followed the government's order of allowing only fully vaccinated people to enter the church. And she's wondering, is that right?
I don't think so. Who gets to decide who comes to church? Well, that would be the church itself. Matthew 18 specifically, all are welcome in a church unless they're unruly or living in unrepentant sin. It is the church that gets to decide who attends, not the government. That would be, in my opinion, an instance of Acts 4 and 5. That could be Rahab. That could be Daniel, if you prefer. We submit to government in all things unless they cause us to not submit to God. Our primary authority, the supreme king, is Jesus Christ himself. We obey him. And if a government comes along and issues a mandate that says, no, not in this instance, we say, nope, sorry, You're the government, and we strive to submit to you, but we submit not to Caesar in ecclesiastical issues. We submit to the one who owns the church, Jesus Christ. Now, some churches, let's make this a little bit more dicey. I think that's pretty clear cut to me. Now, where this is going to get a little bit challenging is that some churches are probably going to say, okay, we'll obey. And other churches are going to say, oh, no, we're not. And I think that we need to leave room for different churches to make different decisions. But I would plead with those who are willing to shut the door on people who, for conscience reasons or health reasons, if they believe that it is a sin to do so, to say, well, you can't come in, oofta. That's making a law based on what Caesar wants and not on what Jesus Christ wants. Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org. Jimmy, hold on.
Okay.
All right. Let me. You're a pastor of a church, okay, and your state says you can only let people in who are vaccinated. You going to obey that?
No.
Mm-hmm. And the church next door also happens to be a sound Bible-believing church. Now, I know that scenario is fantastic because you never find two Bible-teaching churches next door. There yeah. may be two in a town if you're blessed. But, yeah. All right, the church next door, they submit to Caesar in that regard. Would you say they're sinning?
No.
Yeah, I think it's... You know what? I have to confess, this is kind of this dicey little territory where it's like, I don't know that I would come down hard, but I'm leaning more toward, I think it might be, you're prohibiting people from fellowshipping.
Yeah, I mean, I see that, but also I guess the grand scheme of things, you need to understand why they made that decision.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a willful sin, most likely. If they're right. a Bible-teaching church, they're probably thinking, well, this is how we love our neighbor. This is how we submit to Caesar. This is how we protect people. And so perhaps with some good motives, nevertheless, I'd be thinking to myself, I wouldn't condemn them. I wouldn't blog nasties about them. But I would encourage them. Who are you listening to here? Really? And I understand because they're going to see, maybe they see the whole COVID thing, the whole vaccine thing different than you do. Well, while I'd be inclined to lean in that direction, I think I'm with you, Jimmy. It's, I don't know that I would want to condemn a church for a decision like that. And might I add this? I don't like that. I don't like that a church would say, show me your vaccine passport in order to join us for corporate worship. I mean, I really don't like that at all. But would that mean that I could not have fellowship with the elders who made that decision? I don't think I could break over that. Can we? Should we? Isn't this one where we can at least see, all right, you got a different take on it. I don't agree with you. I think you're bordering on sinning. But brother, sister, we can live in harmony and unity together when we disagree on some of these social and now ecclesiastical issues. Please send your emails of disagreement to idea@wretched.org.
All right, from Michael, he is wondering, how long should a Christian wait to divorce their unbelieving spouse who has abandoned them?
Oh, wow.
He said everyone keeps telling him to hold on and have faith, but he finds himself yearning to move on.
Yeah. Because the Bible doesn't give a calendar, it doesn't offer a timeline. If your spouse abandons you, one of the biblical, I believe, biblical reasons that divorce is not a sin for you, your spouse has broken the covenant by leaving it. They're not. You can't be married to somebody who's not there. Having said that, I do believe that wisdom does need to apply. For just to be a little bit silly and extraordinary for a second, you and your spouse get into a fight. She leaves the house, slams the door, and goes to the mall and doesn't come back for hours. Can you divorce her? Well, you'd go, well, no, she went off to the, okay. She goes to her mother's house for 2 days. Did she abandon? You could get the, okay. So what I'm saying is, while the Bible doesn't give us a timeline, I do believe that wisdom needs to be applied with your elders in your local Bible teaching church to be wise about this. What should you consider? Well, did they move out or did they just grab a couple of things and go? Did they start changing bank accounts, pulling their money, making some of those other credit card-like decisions that are like, hey, this thing is severed here. They're out of here. Have they moved away? I mean, closer versus further could make a difference. Are they starting to date other people? Those would be some of the measurements that I would use to carefully come up with a decision with my elders to say, tragically, my spouse has abandoned me. I have legal grounds now for divorce. And one last note. Should you have to make that decision, and you've done it wisely, prayerfully, biblically, with your elders, don't look back with regrets. Don't do that to yourself. Don't second guess yourself. Be slow, be wise, be biblical, be prayerful, and don't feel guilty or terrible that you had to make a terrible decision that was really shoved onto you. This is Wretched Radio. Be careful. Be very, very careful, my cold-hearted conservative friend, because this just might melt your heart if you are a supporter of preborn.org/wretched, providing ultrasounds, ultrasound machines, and sonograms. Careful, this might just melt your heart.
That sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
You're giving love when you support Preborn, because a mommy sees a baby in the womb courtesy of an ultrasound machine and 80% of the time keeps the baby. $28 an ultrasound, or perhaps you might be of the means to provide an actual ultrasound machine if you can. Oh, they need them, and they'll put them to work, and it'll show some love. Preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Wretched Radio today. We certainly appreciate you, and we don't take your time for granted. I want to take just a moment while I can to point you in the direction of our newest resource, Wretched Worldview, with Todd Friel and Dr. Owen Strand, as they have gathered together and tackled 22 tough contemporary issues, which brings our Christian worldview into crystal clear focus. And this wasn't done in an effort to tell you what to think, but how to think these issues through. So many Christians today have a dualistic worldview, which means they place their Christianity in the realm of faith while at the same time taking logic, reason, science, and even morality and fixing that in the realm of reality. And the results have been pretty clear and pretty evident. Christians all over operating without a proper biblical Christian worldview. And Wretched Worldview is seeking to change all that. Pick your copy up right now at wretched.org/worldview. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11, another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they joined Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the things that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month, you'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe, and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 1807. The British Parliament votes to abolish the slave trade. Its decision is owing in large part to the tireless efforts of the Christian politician, William Wilberforce. Wilberforce's example spurred on abolitionist efforts in America for the next 55 years.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You may be joking, but you might have a little bit of wisdom there, Jimmy. This is Wretched Radio. During the break, Jimmy decided to share what he was thinking off air. So what is a host to do? Bring it on air.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what you do. So, Jimmy, you said that if the church next to you was not allowing people, we're not allowing people to come to their church because they're not vaccinated, but your church takes a different position on it. You let everybody who wants to come, come.
Right.
Then you would do what?
Well, first, the first part of the question was, would I condemn the other church? And I said, no, I wouldn't condemn the other church. But what I shared off air was that I would also likely go find all their unvaccinated people and tell them.
Invite them to your church.
Right. And then come worship with us.
The truth is, that's actually happening a lot. Not exactly those details. But a lot of churches that are making decisions that some people disagree with, they're vamoosing to go to another church. And we've seen a swapping of sheep a lot, haven't we? I also think we're not just seeing a lot of sheep swapping. I think we're starting to experience and see some of the cleansing. Do you remember before all of this nonsense really started accelerating? We said, hey, this could have a cleansing effect on the church. I think it is. I think you're starting to see more churches just either go out of business, because that's probably what it was for them, or just become so non-Christian, they're really not discernible as a church. And I think we're going to see it more and more. And you're going to see more and more people. In fact, here's a statistic I think supports what I'm saying. A new poll that says more people now believe in evolution. Most Americans now accept evolution. The headline to this is a real stitch. With higher levels of education and declining religiosity, most Americans now accept evolution. Who said, I think it was John MacArthur, who said, Al had this in his office posted, most people are actually born relatively smart. You have to go to university to get dumb. And wow, can that be true? Not entirely, but you get the point. From 1985 to 2010, there was a statistical dead heat between acceptance and rejection of evolution. Now, oof-da, acceptance has surged, becoming the majority position in 2016. So we are seeing a shift in our culture that 54% of people now believe evolution is how we got here. 54%. An unguided process got us here. What is that? Not biblical thinking. Expect more of it. As we expect your emails sent to idea@wretched.org.
All right. This is kind of a tough one from Linda. She's wondering when someone who has a loved one who is near death and in pain, what can you tell the surviving person and also the one dying that are unbelievers? What do you tell the unbelieving surviving person
about somebody who died? Okay,
right.
Let's get this detail straight here because this is kind of important. Is the person on their deathbed a believer?
No.
Nah.
And she says they're too far gone to accept Christ.
Well, you know what? I would say you don't know that for sure. Okay, we don't know what's going on inside of there. Now there are cases where you could be absolutely correct, but don't lose all hope with that. You don't know what God is doing in their heart. They don't need to blink their eyes twice or make a profession to you. It is between them and God. Having said that, this is akin to preaching at the funeral of somebody who's not saved. I think we need to be wise about this because of the timing. And yet we don't want to water down the truth. So here's what we don't want to say. Well, Jim's on his way to hell. What about you? Okay. True, but not all that pastoral or thoughtful or peaceable, probably. So how's about something like this at the right time? Because let's learn from Job's counselors. Timing is kind of important when it comes to opening up our flappers. Doesn't James tell us that we have more of a propensity to start forest fires than we do to edify? So maybe something like, if you're wondering about the eternal state of Jim, Jim did not repent and put his trust in Jesus Christ. His sins aren't forgiven, and God is going to do what is just and right with Jim. But here we are, breathing air. And we're not on our deathbed today. We might be, but we're not today. Let's talk about you. Let's leave Jim out of it for a moment. Let's just talk about you. What is the status of your soul? Something like that, I think, would be a little bit more pastoral. It did not water it down. It didn't say that Jim was in heaven. It didn't quite come out and say, well, he's just a hunk of burning human in a lake of sulfur. I think it's just a little bit more wise. Send your emails, please, to idea@wretched.org.
Speaking of hell, Oni is wondering, do people...
You know, I was sent a book about hell.
You weren't? Did you read it?
I want to. It's in my stack. I think it was a local pastor who wrote it. And the title of it was, What's Good About Hell? Okay, he hooked me. It's in my stack.
I got you.
Well, it's good to know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's not. I don't think it's preached about enough.
I'm telling you, it's not. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Okay. I was struck by this. I think I maybe mentioned this. But last Wednesday, we were out at Kennesaw State University. And that's what I was starting to kind of pick up. The problem here is that there's a lack of fear of the Lord. Remember, they don't get wisdom and get converted. They get converted and then get wisdom. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. And I was talking about this with Ray Comfort, which, by the way, if you're new to Christianity, anytime you say Ray's name, you have to do a really bad New Zealand accent. That's just the way it works. Ray Comfort said, why don't you want to be wise today? Why don't you start being wise today? Fear the Lord. I think that's a great way of putting it to somebody. Hey, hell is real and it's hot and you don't want to be there. And Jesus is your escape hatch. Take it. Receive his terms of peace today and start becoming wise. Why don't you want to be wise? I think we need a little bit more correct hellfire preaching and an encouragement for people to stop being foolish. Sorry, what was the
question
about hell
from Oni, wondering, do people who die and go to hell become aware of all of the sin that got them there?
Yeah. I mean, each and every one, will they have a perfect memory? I don't know, but I think they'll have enough of a memory to lament being there. Remember the grinding of teeth, the gnashing that is going to go on. The wailings of hell, I think, are motivated by a number of things. Remember, they never wish they could trust Jesus. I'd like to trust Jesus, but I can't. Nope, nobody in hell thinks like that. Instead, with their teeth clenched, they say, I hate him even more. And then they return to wailing because they're in eternal conscious torment. Will they remember each and every sin that got them there? Perhaps. I think what they're going to maybe remember more, if I had to guess, and that's all this is that they're going to remember the times that they didn't listen to their parents, to their preacher, to their spouse, to the evangelist who had the courage to say, can I talk to you about your soul? That, I think, is going to cause some of the tearful lament of being there. I blew it. I blew it. I blew it. I was an idiot. And then they return to their fury against God, because that's what hell is filled with. Unrepentant enemies of God. That never changes. Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org.
All right. From Christopher, says he was brought up in a Catholic home, and whenever he tells his dad something that he doesn't agree with, like we are living in the end times, he says that his dad says that people have different ways of interpreting things in the Bible. And he's wondering how to respond to that.
Yeah, of course we do. This might be helpful. I know this isn't perhaps to the bullseye of the conundrum, but a couple of thoughts. One would be, first of all, live peaceably with your pop. I know this is not easy. And no, I am not saying that you never try to teach, that you never try to instruct. But I think that as a son or daughter of an unbelieving parent or somebody who is in a bad system or somebody who claims they're a Christian, but it's pretty clear they're not, don't make arguing the center of your relationship. Be a great son or daughter. The second thought, and this may or may not be bullseye-ish, would be hermeneutics. You know what, Dad? You're right. People do read the Bible differently. Let's figure out why. And the answer is found in the word hermeneutic. There are different ways to read the Bible. So why don't we reason together and see what would be the best way to read this Bible? And then you could do a study of hermeneutics, hopefully leading him to an understanding of a grammatical historical hermeneutic, so that the person, and this is going to be some of the beautiful fruit, will read, say, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, Matthew 24, the entire book of Revelation, and become a pre-trib dispensationalist. What you could do right there. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, you know, I don't live in California, but I do have friends that do, and I'm so glad to read that the California Synod is dealing with issues that are very urgent in our society. They recently passed a bill that requires gender-neutral displays for toys and childcare products in stores. Is it something that customers are asking for? No, the department stores also are not asking for it, and toy manufacturers aren't asking for it either. It's literally nothing but virtue signaling by the state of California. You know, the same state that's crumbling under taxes, corruption, homelessness, natural disasters, and of course, all the addiction that is plaguing the state. Because there's nothing more important in the state of California right now. Good on you, California Senate. Well, a coalition of buildings that you go to in Texas to talk about things. Okay, so it's hard for me to call these places churches, but there is a group of 25 Texas churches opposing the state's heartbeat bill and are promoting the continued legalization of abortion. These churches are designated as, quote, reproductive freedom congregations, and they say their goal is to eradicate the stigma around reproductive freedom in the state of Texas, one congregation at a time. Al Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, was quoted as saying, "Anyone who labels abortion as a moral and social good rejects Christianity's teachings." Well, in Chicago, there's a third grade teacher at Abraham Lincoln Elementary School who's taken to Twitter to show off LGBTQ indoctrination books that she plans to teach from, and she's telling people to check their white privilege because she just loves third graders so much. And don't allow me to paraphrase, I'll let her speak for herself.
Let's discuss something because it needs to continue to be talked about. You don't think white supremacy and white privilege exists? Check yourself.
My friends, it is June, which means it's Pride Month. That is a month that we celebrate all of the incredible people who are members of the LGBTQIA+ community. You might say, that's a lot of letters.
And it appears that she's nothing more than an activist who's masquerading as a teacher. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Books of the Bible. 1 Timothy contains Paul's instructions to his protege for church leadership. Paul exhorts Timothy to confront and correct false teachers and to preserve sound doctrine through church structure and preaching of the word. The church has a responsibility to preserve and maintain the truth given by God in his word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
I-D-E-A. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I being pedantic like so many of our politicians? This is Wretched Radio. Please send your emails to idea. I trust you can spell it. idea@wretched.org with questions, comments, conundrums, or snarks.
You want the snarks? I've got plenty of them ready.
Let's have some snarks then.
I'm joking. Well, yeah, I guess this is a question slash snark or a snarky question from Anonymous, who says, okay, Mr. Romans 13, what if the government mandates public school? Are you going to submit to that?
See, that gets a little trickier. We need to keep in view that Acts 4 and 5 is our guiding exception principle to Romans 13, which is submit to the government, but if they're causing you to sin, then you don't do it. And I believe that there could be some people who would say, actually, it's a sin to send my kid to that school. Not every Christian is clearly going to agree with that. But I believe that if you feel like sending your child to a public school is a sin, then Romans 14 says you can't do it because you cannot go against your conscience grain. You need to be submissive to what your conscience is teaching you, even if it happens to be not as fully formed at the moment. So the three Bible verses that I think help us harmonize the whole, what do we do when the government tells us to do it? I think, first of all, the whole umbrella is we submit to God. Now we're taking a look at the column underneath the umbrella, which is government. And here are the three verses. Romans 13, submit. 1 Peter 2 says the same thing. Titus 3 says the same thing. Titus 3, I believe, is submit to all authorities. That even broadens it. So anybody who has any sort of authority over you, we submit. Acts 4 and 5, unless they're commanding us to do something that is a sin for us. And we need to think that through carefully. And incidentally, we can't just not like something. It's not enough to not be obedient to the government. There's a lot of stuff the government does I don't like. I get annoyed by a lot of legislation, but the annoyance is not enough of a Christian reason to say, I don't have to submit. If, however, you believe that you will be sinning by obeying the government, you obey God and you don't do it, Romans 14. You keep those three verses in your purview as you go about the business of trying to figure out to what do we submit and what don't we. And I think that's probably going to guide you pretty well. Idea at Wretched. That wasn't snarky. Okay, the Mr. Romans 13 thing maybe was.
All right.
Idea at Wretched.org.
Yeah, from Jim. Jim's got a pretty interesting question. He says, let me start by saying I am not defending karma. Rather, I'm thinking that there are things the world has adopted into their own worldview. What goes around comes around. Isn't that a common way of saying what God has said? Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap.
Well, no. No. Because the goes around comes around. That's a pretty good descriptor of karma. In the past, we have talked about the difference between sowing and reaping. Reaping to the spirit, sowing to the spirit, sowing to the flesh. And the consequences that typically, but not always, come from that. Karma's different than that. First of all, it's unguided. God is the one who keeps the accounts on the reaping and sowing column. But karma is this unguided, we don't know who's running it, who's keeping track of what you're doing or what you're not doing or what you should be doing. And there's no rule book to tell us, therefore, this is your consequence for doing this thing. So I understand that what goes around comes around kind of sounds like reaping and sowing. But I think if we are going to keep the distinction between karma, an unguided process, an undetermined, undefined process, I think we would stay away from that term and say things like God isn't mocked. What you reap, you're going to sow. That's just much more, you know, biblical. Idea at wretched.org.
All right. So Lauren has a pretty interesting question, too. All these questions are interesting. But she says she was wondering if you could shed some light on MMA fighting, sports like the UFC and wrestling and boxing. She feels that she feels convicted and feels that it's wrong to watch sports like that, but she has a lot of family that enjoy it.
That it does that.
Right.
So what do we do with that?
Yeah.
Jimmy, I don't know if I ever shared this with you. I actually 3 years was an MMA fighter.
Really?
No. No. I'd cry. Hey, don't try to hit me in the head. What's the matter with you? Wouldn't that be a fight? This is one that I think needs some pretty careful noodling. And I think that I want to start out with big theological ideas. I want to start out with Imago Dei. What are we? What about our bodies? I also want to consider issues like work and appropriate risk when necessary, and doing something that is considered a reasonable risk, but it could cause your body to wear out a little bit. Okay, I want to put all of these things out there, and so I'm trying to saturate my thinking right now with what does God say about how I'm supposed to be using my body. Would it be a sin for you, I'm talking about you, for your body, made in the image of God? You are a dualistic person, body and spirit. Your body is going to be resurrected. Your body is going to live with you. You are your body and your spirit. You're two things for eternity. In other words, it's precious. Jesus laid down his body so that our bodies could be resurrected. So it is not a trifle when we think about how we're going to use this thing. It's important. Yet I understand risks. So there you're walking down the street and somebody out of the blue punches you in the guts. Have you sinned? No, you were sinned against. Now, what if you put yourself into an environment where there is a very high likelihood, no, almost a certainty, you're going to get punched in the guts? Is that how you should be using your body? Should you use this precious thing? And it is a precious thing, and it is an amazing thing. Have you ever, I want to go look this up, because I'm not sure that I've got this right, but I don't think it will do damage if I'm wrong. We're fearfully and wonderfully made. What does that mean? The wonderful part we get, what fear? Where does, you were scared when you were conceived? No, that's, your parents were scared. No, that's not what's in view. I think that understanding how we're made causes us to fear God, because it's amazing. It is, wow. Even as I speak, I'm coordinating. Okay, maybe not in a way that is interpretable, but I'm coordinating my hands. And my face is sort of in conjunction with what I'm saying. And my brain is putting together words at a pretty quick pace here without having to be programmed. Well, it's already been programmed, but you get the point. It's a mate. So do I want to intentionally put my head into an environment where it's going to get scrambled and I could become duller? If you sinned after I said that, then that's between you and God. I could become duller by putting myself into that environment. And I don't know that I should be doing that with my body. Therefore, I do believe that there are some of these sports, and I want to be careful and define, I think, a category distinction. There are some of these sports that I think it's too violent. I think it diminishes the image-bearing value of a human being. It's abusing God's temple. We should never be doing that with food or with fighting. Could there, however, be a sport or thing like this that you get involved in? Yeah, I think so. Like karate, jujitsu, where you're not actually beating each other up. You're learning how to defend yourself. Rock on. And you should apply that as you need that appropriately. I don't think that should cause any Christian to have a conundrum. But I do tend to think putting your body into a situation that is almost a certain risk, it is going to get hurt by it. I don't know that that's the right thing for us to do. Jimmy, you,
yep.
You ever do any MMA fighting?
No, I have not done
any. Would you do any MMA fighting?
I would, no, probably not.
Do you think it's a sin to do MMA fighting?
I think maybe. I think definitely. I think attributes of it can cause you to sin. I mean, you think about it logistically. When you get into a fight with somebody, somebody hits you in the mouth. What do? You get angry.
Well, there's that. There's that too. Sure, yeah. I got to watch that, personally. But as far as like just putting my eyes on it, I wonder, too, just if a fruit of that couldn't be, you get dulled to violence. True. And video games tend to do that a lot. Did I just say that out loud? Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org. This is Wretched Radio.
Calling all hands and feet, we need you again. Over the years, you have partnered with us to distribute over 1 million copies of The Biggest Question and another million copies of What Time is Purple? Well, now we need you again. We know you have it in you to help distribute 1 million copies of our newest booklet, Solving the God Puzzle. Solving the God Puzzle helps answer the doubts people have on the existence of God. A lot of what we encounter today is mere hopelessness, and helping people to tackle this issue is of the utmost importance because eternity is at stake here. That's why we want you to partner with us in getting this booklet into as many hands as possible. We will send you as many copies of Solving the God Puzzle as you promised to give away free. And we'll even cover the shipping if you request more than a case. All of the details and your copies of Solving the God Puzzle right now at wretched.org/puzzle. That's wretched.org/puzzle.
This shopping rule has been officially broken. You know the rule. You're in the store. You're choosing between two items. One is more expensive. It's the nicer one, you think. And it's better than the less expensive item. You can't have both. It can't be inexpensive and good. That rule has just been broken. MediShare. Double the satisfaction rate of people who have traditional health insurance. MediShare is affordable biblical health sharing, and it saves the average family $500 per month. And yet, the people, the 400,000 people that are in the MediShare program, are more satisfied with MediShare than other folks with traditional health insurance. The rule has been broken. Learn how much you could save and be happy with MediShare at 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
All right, so what's something that you think, but you know you shouldn't say out loud? I'll go ahead and say what I know all of you are thinking, and that's most Bible studies are boring. That's right, it's true, and you know it is. But now there's a solution to that enigma, and it's getting yourself a new Wretched Bible Study. With our new Wretched Bible Studies, you'll find that you can dig into God's Word and not feel guilty for feeling bored. The Wretched Bible Study curriculum is derived from our resources Drive by Marriage, Drive by Parenting, Drive by Theology, Jesus Unmasked, and Stressed Out. And I know you're thinking, yeah, well, Jimmy, you're biased. Maybe, but don't just take my word for it. Try one of our studies out for yourself by visiting wretched.org/study. That's wretched.org/study. The new Wretched Bible Studies are interesting, relevant, and of course, always biblical. wretched.org/study.
Attributes of God. God is omniscient, meaning he knows all things. He knows all things past, present, and future. God does not learn new information, and nothing takes him by surprise. He knows what will happen and is working all things for his glory and the good of those who love him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And away you go. This is Wretched Radio. That is the number of the old toll-free, 1-877-282-BEEP. Let's see what you have to say.
My wife of 22 years recently passed away of breast cancer. I know she is in heaven, but I miss her. I also know she's not aware of anything going on down here. But do you think when I'm praying to God, I could ask him to tell Colette that John said hello?
That is the sweetest thing, dude. Sorry. Hope that like was not like over the boundaries of correct gender speak. That's real sweet, man. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I would have to find a Bible verse that would say you can make your petitions, prayers, and requests made known to the Lord. You can cast your cares on the Lord, but don't ask him to let your loved one know that you miss them.
and that you look forward to seeing them, and that you're glad that they're in heaven now with their Lord. I don't think we can find a verse that would suggest that that is inappropriate. And dude, I'm so sorry for your loss. 22 years. Oh.
Church sign, be yourself, because an original is worth more than a copy.
I'm so...
You okay?
That was my vitamin water. It's just a little choke right there. Be yourself, because there's what it...
Church sign, be yourself, because an original is worth more than a copy.
That's romantic. And I don't mean amorous. I mean, that is romantic philosophy. Be yourself. You be you. You do you. Your truth. All of that is a romantic postmodern perspective on the world, which makes man the center of it. I'm sorry. Did she say that was actually on a church sign?
Yep.
I can see the Shriners or the Freemasons, but... A church?
Church sign. Tell Satan to take a hike.
I gotta know who this guy is.
Church sign. Tell Satan to take a hike.
Sounds a little like Ty Pennington.
Church sign. Tell Satan to take a hike.
It was that last hike that got a little smoky sounding. Who are you, sir? Got to be careful with the whole talking to Satan business. Now, I know Martin Luther appeared to do it. I was always uncomfortable with that. It was zesty. It sure was feisty. But I'm not sure that the lesson that we learned from Jude about the Archangel Michael wrestling with the devil over the body of Moses, that the Archangel was showing, they rightly understood, some R-E-S-P-E-C-T. You don't fight with the devil. We resist temptation by submitting to God and he flees. That's spiritual warfare. We fill our brains with truth so there's no room for error. That's spiritual warfare. That is how we disengage with the spiritual battle. You consider the armor that we're supposed to put on, the weaponry that we're given. It is all word-centered, truth-centered, knowledge-centered. And so we, if we don't want to be messed with by demons, grow in Christ-likeness by studying his word, which reveals his son, which gives us the motivation to become increasingly like him. We submit to God, therefore, in everything we do as best we can. And then you don't have to worry about a really dopey church sign.
Church sign. Tell Satan to take a hike.
Maybe it is Ty Pennington.
Well, hello, Mr.
And who are you? Who are these characters?
Well, hello, Mr. Friel.
Okay. It's Mr. Friel to you.
Well, hello, Mr. Friel. I was wondering when it comes to the mandated V's, if there is discord in the home over the different opinions, how do you decide which one to go with?
Oh, that is a lulu of a question that has a ton of layers. I was in Minnesota. Did I ever mention that I was in Minnesota the last weekend, I believe? Something like that, how time flies. And there was a lovely get-together, a soiree, if you will, at David Wheaton's place in Minnesota. And he had folks that follow his radio program and his ministry there, just a bunch of sweet saints. And it just was so casual and easy and yet not sloppy and boring. He organized, if you will, a panel of pastors to discuss issues just like this. I happened to be sitting on that panel where the question was raised. This is the particular dynamic. I know this isn't addressing your general question, sir, but this was the scenario. The woman is a believer. The husband is a believer. A husband wants her to get vaccinated. She doesn't. Does she submit? If that doesn't make your eyes kind of just go boing a little bit, then you're not going to appreciate what a pastor deals with on a daily basis. These are the type of balls of twine that get thrown into his office every day that he needs to untangle. What would you say to that woman? What would you say to that woman? It's the same thing that I would say about vaccinations. I would speak to the whatever order. I'd speak to the woman and I would say, if you believe it is a sin, then you do not have to submit to the husbandly to your husband's authority, because you'd be sinning if you did. It's the same verses that we've been talking about here. Romans 13, Acts 4, 5, Romans 14. It would be a sin against your conscience, and you can't do that. So I would say you have grounds, in my opinion, to lovingly and respectfully say, honey, I just can't do it because I believe that you'd be causing me to sin. And I would encourage her to point him as a believer to the Bible to say, and this is why, this is how I put it together. And Romans 14, really clear. If you tell me to commit a sin, then I'm going to be sinning. And you're going to be sinning by commanding me to sin. So I know you're not nuts about this, but can we live with that in our home? That's what I might suggest to the woman. But to the fella, I wouldn't leave him out of this. And this is a general principle. This is a specific application of what I think is the general principle about husbandry-ing. And that is, most of the time, sir, we defer, we let, we don't choose. That's not what it means to be the spiritual leader in your home. It means that we serve and we sacrifice. And in those times when a tipped ball is required, then we lovingly, not forcefully and toxically, render that verdict. But we say, look, a decision needs to be made here, and God has given me the authority for the tip ball situation, so this is the way it's going. Most of the time, if you are looking at your wife as a wise blessing from God, you'll consult. You don't make decisions in a vacuum. You want their knowledge and wisdom. So to the husband, I would say, you, sir, need to be very, very careful about forcing something onto your wife when she disagrees. Now, in this instance, for her, it's a sin issue. But I would say even in non-sin issues, it's just not wise to do that. For instance, buying a house. She wants the blue one. He wants the white one. And they can't come to, they've talked through it. They can't, don't move. Just don't do it. It's too big. It's too important. It's too daily and constant. And it's not a sin issue. It's probably a preference. It could even be a financial decision, but nobody's sinning in this. You're just seeing finances differently. Do not impose whatever your opinion is on these big decisions in life. Otherwise, you're going to have some struggles. Now, in general, I think that the husband and wife, they need to work through it lovingly. I would sit both of them down and say, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to beg you, plead with you, petition you to please do this lovingly, recognizing that nobody's trying to be terrible in this situation. You're just seeing things differently. And I'd be happy to arbitrate that conversation for you if you'd like, but I'll tell you what the rules are going to be. And then I'd go back to repeating exactly what I just said. That is how I think that I would go about trying to be somewhat helpful.
I just want to say, Todd, thank you for all that you do. Can't say I agree with you all the time, but you got enough right that you're doing a good job. Thanks.
I can live with that. In fact, I don't know. It depends on how much you listen to somebody or listen to their preaching or just hang out with a friend. It's inevitable. You're gonna find some stuff to disagree with. I think the challenge for our time, honestly, for those of us who are conservative, Bible-thumping Christians, it's, am I going to be able to love my brothers with whom I disagree on things that are not essential? I think that is one of the biggest challenges facing the church today. Thank you, sir. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.